Stewart wants it. And looks for Amakachi!
It's a grand old team to play for. It's a grand old team to support. And if you know your history, it's enough to make your heart go whoa.
Hello there and welcome back to this special end of 2017 edition of the Grand Old Team podcast, where we'll look back at another year of highs and lows as an Evertonian. We've had everything from battering Manchester City 4-0 to re-signing one of our most famous sons to waving goodbye to Ronald Koeman and saying hello to Big Sam Allardyce. I'm Adam Partington and here to look back on this year with me is forum regular Groucho, forum and podcast regular Groucho, and author Jim Keoghan. So lads, this is the second attempt because the first attempt we had a few little technical issues. We've already gone over how each other's Christmases were. We established that this is the first night Groucho's getting to drink, so God knows what he'll come out with during the podcast. And Jim, you admitted that like me, you're getting quite fat as well. So that's just to give the listeners a bit of an overview of how our Christmas have gone individually. Right then, so yeah, so look, it's the end of 2017 already. That's slightly mental. And if we rewind all the way back to January and think about how Everton started the year, it was quite positive. I don't think we lost in January, if I remember correctly, in the league. I know we did lose to Leicester the week after beating City 4-0, if I remember rightly. Grouch, thinking back to that 4-0 win at Goodison, that was a little bit mental, wasn't it?
It was, especially, I mean, if you consider what City are playing like now. You know, I think one of the few highlights that we had under Ronald Koeman, I think if you take his time as a whole, I seem to remember it being sort of when Tom Davies sort of came of age, if you like, that goal he scored. He started to move off, got floored halfway through and got back up. And scored, and Luchman as well, who, to be honest, he hasn't had much of a chance really since, has he? But did seem to be looking okay that day, and I don't think he's really done anything wrong when he's had the chance, has he? But yeah, beating Man City 4-0, something, and wasn't there something at the time as well, isn't Guardiola's never actually beaten Koeman, has he, in a competitive league game?
No,
when they faced each other, I think, which is odd.
Yeah, and Jim, this is an early plug for your bookmate. So let's get this one in there straight away. You've obviously written a book recently on Everton's greatest games, and you were saying in the first attempt that we did at the podcast, you know, that you had left that one out. But do you think in the future it'll be a game that we'll look back at and be even more puzzled after City have won title after title after title, and we'll wonder how on earth Everton did that?
I think we just caught them at a low moment, and we, I mean, as you said before, back then we looked good. That was kind of, you know, that seemed to be the high point of the Koeman era, when you thought that, you know, he'd found his feet and maybe we were starting to build something really positive. And I think you felt after that game that, you know, this new project at Goodison was going somewhere. It seems strange to look back now and you see how far City have come and you see what's happened at Everton since then, especially over recent months. You think it's quite amazing, really.
Yeah.
It makes it all the more amazing that still this season we're the only team to take points off them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I can't quite get over. But it was a really good win that day. I remember Luckman as well. Do you remember Lukaku almost taking Luckman's goal off him? Which did he actually get a touch on it? And
he didn't get a touch on it. I think it was very, very close, but no, I don't think he got a touch on it in the end.
That kind of,
he tried to claim it.
Yeah, he did. He tried to claim it, and then he realised that he would probably get shot if he did that. But also in January, lads, we had Moyes raiding Everton's B team. Oviedo and Gibson went off to sign for Sunderland. Obviously, that went well. Boys, do you kind of agree with me that Gibson was actually quite a good footballer? He just was very unfit and injury prone. I'll put that one to Jim first, and then Groucho, you can give me your thoughts on Darren Gibson.
Yeah, I think he had ability. and certainly when he played for us, there were times when he looked impressive. But it's a bit like McCarthy now. There's no point having these players in your squad who are just never going to play because, you know, they come in for a couple of games, they look all right, they do something, and then they're gone for months. And, you know, you can't have that. You can't carry. Seems like Everton can't carry those sort of players. So, yeah, he was all right, and he could belt a ball as well. Like, but what's the point of having someone who's just not going to make the first team because he's got a knock constantly?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Gibson is, like you say, he was a good player, but he just didn't look after himself, did he? I think a lot of it was his sort of his own fault. If he'd looked after himself a bit better, who knows? You know, we might have maybe Man U wouldn't have got rid of him in the first place. I mean, I don't think we paid very much for him either, did we? Wasn't it something stupid like $500,000?
Something like that.
Nothing. So, bit of a shame, really, because I think he had a lot of potential and he was a good player, but sort of wasted himself, really.
Yeah, Jim, you know when you talk about having those players in your side that are injured all the time, like the one example that first sprung to my mind was actually Kompany at City, but obviously Kompany's that good that when you bring him back, he just walks straight into the side and it doesn't matter if he's out for like long periods of time almost. He's just that valuable to you. I think probably Solskjaer was similar, wasn't he? Very frequently injured, but obviously he would score really important goals for Man United. You bring him in and then players kind of get a free pass for their injuries. But people like Darren Gibson don't. But I actually thought that Darren Gibson was quite a good footballer. And I loved Brian Oviedo as well. I think that's purely down to that game at Man United. Obviously, him scoring the winner there and giving us our first win there in 20 years or whatever. I assume that game made your butt then, did it, Jim? And for that, therefore, obviously, Oviedo's got a little special place in your heart too.
Yeah, but that's the last game to make it. That was because again, it was so kind of reflective of the Martinez first season, kind of how positive things were under positive Martinez, and. Yeah, I think he was a player who seemed to promise much. And then I think after his leg break, he never really came back the same, did he?
No, he didn't. So obviously that was January then, summed up then. And then Luckman came in as well in January. I kind of still feel like I'd like to have seen a little bit more of Luckman by this point. Do you know what I mean, Grouch?
Absolutely. I mean, Charlton we got him from, wasn't he? He was like the latest wonder kid. I mean, I don't think did they buy him to put straight into the under-23s or was he bought as a first-team squad player? I'm not sure, but I mean, he scores against Man City. Every time we see him, he's got the pace. He's never going to learn and develop if he's not played. We need pace. I'd love to see him. Every time I see his name in the team, she's going, great, yeah, get him in. It's just it's a shame it hasn't happened often enough.
Do you know, Jim, do you think it'd be a bit crazy, though? Or is it a sign of the times if you sign a player for $10 million? And he's just for the under-21s for the foreseeable future.
I mean, possibly. I agree. I'd like to see him play more. I think, I mean, there are times over the last, say, 6 months when we've looked really pedestrian. But every time he comes on, his instinct is to go forward and to play like a risky ball or take a man on. It's the one thing Everton seem to lack for a while now. And you've got this, you know, this kind of adventurous kid on the bench or not even the bench sometimes, you're thinking, why not give him a chance? Why not give him a 3 or 4 game run rather than what he often gets is kind of, you know, a few minutes here and there. It just seems really weird to kind of, I mean, he wasn't cheap either, kind of, you know, buying from the lower leagues. So it just seems like a really weird thing to have done, really, in the end.
He is one of them strange footballers, again, that supporters highly rate, but you do sometimes wonder if maybe it's an attitude thing or a mentality thing just in terms of his like mental strength and that managers see a weakness there, or maybe he fails to take instructions on and he's a little bit of kind of just that luxury player, and you know, when you need him to do a disciplined job or have a really specific role in the side, he just isn't that lad. So do you know what I mean? I think that there must be something else there because Koeman's come in and we didn't really see him utilise him in the way that we thought he'd be utilised. Unsworth didn't really, I mean, deploy him. I mean, maybe would have been somebody to get Unsworth out of trouble at times. Didn't do that. And then Allardyce doesn't really seem to have taken to him too much either. So maybe there's something there, but he is only a young lad. So we'll have to see what happens with him. But fast forward again, I don't think we lost a league game until March, which is, again, quite strange when you think about how the back end of the year of last year was, you know, and how poor we were for large proportions of that, and actually when I think about the start of the year, which would have been coming towards the end of Martinez's reign, and then there was a 6-3 against Bournemouth at Goodison, and Barkley's goal. That surely, I think Chico referenced this to us on Twitter when I put the tweet out about that being one of his moments. What about for you lads, Grouch? Was that something that you'll look back on quite fondly then from this year, when Barkley celebrated before he scored that goal?
I think so. The celebration before he scored it. It also seems to stick in my mind looking back now, was maybe the last sort of thing that Ross Barkley did before it all went sour. You know, it just seems to be like the sort of, not necessarily a farewell. He probably didn't know he was going to be. Well, I assume he's heading towards the exit. But yeah, it seems to be like the sort of last time when he was a regular in the team, and last sort of, I don't know if it was the last goal he scored, but it's certainly the last memorable one that sticks in my mind that he scored. Anyway, I mean, I remember that game, I was driving home. I can't remember where it had been. And I was sort of near, I remember going like the long way round, just so I didn't get home, so I didn't have to turn the radio off and jump in, you know, and miss a bit. But yeah, it just seems to be, whatever's gone sour, that seemed to be in my mind, sticks in my mind to be the last sort of thing that he did before it all seemed to have just gone downhill.
Yeah, and Jim, as you're like kind of like you are the writer on the line. Do you remember a lot being written about that goal, especially on social media, but also a lot of football journalists talking about the ethics of it? You know, celebrating before it had gone in and how disrespectful that was to Bournemouth. Do you remember kind of what your thoughts were on it then?
Yeah, well, I thought it was great. I mean, I think you want players to be a bit cocky, don't you? You want them to be confident and kind of a bit full and stuff. You don't want wallflowers.
Is that because he did it for your team, though, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if I was a Bournemouth fan, I'd probably fucking hate him. But I think to see that as I was home, especially, you know, Barkley's had his, you know, his before that, had kind of, you know, issues with the fans. He'd had paid his way. He probably wasn't playing to his full potential. When you see a player doing that, you kind of respond to it and think, yes, great that. And all kind of the criticism that you got at the time, I couldn't have given a shit. I just thought it was great to see one of our own just full of confidence and at the point playing really well as well.
Yeah, I do remember some really hilarious reactions, overreactions to it on Twitter, especially. Again, you know, something that you would expect for Twitter, but from opposition fans and people talk when it. I remember that night, match of the day. You know, they were doing a debate on it there, and I think the pundits were split that night. And I just remember reading some tweets, and they were hilarious how people were reacting to it. It was like he just sacrificed a kitten on the centre circle. It was that kind of reaction from some people. But no, I'm with you guys, actually. I did enjoy it, and I think it showed like almost sometimes. He's a weird one, isn't he, Ross? Because sometimes you think he strikes you as this really kind of shy, not very confident in his own ability type lad, like his head's got the, you know, can go down. And then other times he does stuff like that, which is uber confident. Do you know what I mean? It's like Ronaldo level of confidence. I'll put that out to either of you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one, but I mean, the whole situation with him's gone funny. I remember we were talking, I think one of the first podcasts that I did with you, he was saying, is he a confidence player? But maybe it's just how he feels on the day. Maybe one day he is a confidence player. If he wakes up and he's like the most confident person in the world, like he obviously was on that day, you know, he's a world beater. Other days, not. Mm. It's a funny one.
Mm. Yeah, and obviously that season ended with a bit of a limp, shall we say. 3-1, I think we lost 3-1 down in London to Arsenal, lads. Jim, you'll be better and more equipped to tell me if this is just something I've imagined, but it feels like Everton frequently finish seasons quite poorly. I know there are individual cases where we finish seasons on a bit of a high, but they seem to be a lot less frequent to just kind of the season just fading out. Do you know what I mean?
I think there was a time under Moyes when we did the opposite. I think we kind of started badly, then we sort of come from nowhere at the end and sort of storm it. But I think there are seasons, because of the club we are, when you've sort of got nothing to play for. And I think that's the case last season. We got to the end, and I think maybe there's a sense we couldn't really get much further. And I just think he lost some of that momentum. And then you had the whole, you know, Lukaku leaving in the sense that, you know, there's that's going to be a big issue coming up. So maybe that affected the team a little bit as well. But it was disappointing because, as you said, we'd been unbeaten for a big chunk. And we played well during the second half of the season. We just sort of limped home. Like, you know, it was quite pathetic in the end, really.
That Arsenal game was like a just the most end of season game ever, wasn't it? It was just a really kind of like the players I can't be arsed type performance. Yeah. I've already, you know, I'm already on holiday. And you mentioned Lukaku there. He finished up the season as Everton's record goal scorer, Premier League record goal scorer, obviously. Boys, we've got Man United obviously coming up, and Groucho. At this present moment in time, how do you feel about Romelu Lukaku? And then I'll ask Jim.
Ambivalent. I thought he was great at the time. He was the best goal scorer we'd had. And Don Keezy's pure goal scorer in terms, probably the best since Tony Cotty. I know he wasn't the most popular Everton player, but he was a very good goal scorer. And I think Lukaku was probably the best goal scorer we'd had since him. I mean, Yakubu was good in his first season. Andy Johnson was good. I'm not saying we haven't had decent strikers, but Lukaku had been the best, you know, that we'd had in decades. And then to see him go, you know, it's sad. But in all honesty, I'm surprised we managed to keep him for that extra year. When he came on loan, I thought, we're going to have to get him Champions League to keep him. We didn't. We got Europa League. We stayed, went sour for Martinez. I thought he's off, didn't go. He stayed for one season under Coleman, then went. I was surprised he stayed for that. But he was good. I know for all his criticism that he doesn't score against big teams. You know, he scores against others. I know there was that stat flying around, wasn't there? If without his goals, we'd have still finished seventh. I think this season, if he'd have stayed, we probably would never have been anywhere near 18th. At that point, but my feelings towards him were, it was clear he was a mercenary. You know, he had no loyalty. I don't think he's got loyalty to anybody except it. I think Leon Osman said it, didn't he? Romelu Lukaku doesn't play for Everton. He plays for Romelu Lukaku. That's going to be the same wherever he goes. In time, he'll do the same thing to Man U. You know, he's just one of those players. He's a mercenary at the end of the day, and I know they all are, but at least some of them play the game. Some of them come out with the right things to make the fans feel like, oh, yeah, they want to be here. And I'm sure some of them do. But I just think with him, it was a job. It was a stepping stone, which is sad. But in the harsh reality of the football world that we've got today, I think that was always on the cards. I was a little bit disappointed we only let him go for 75 million, to be honest with you. I thought we'd hold out for 19 myself. But, you know, that was that. But, yeah, sad, but I'm honestly surprised he stayed that extra year.
Jim, were you booing?
Yeah, I'm going to sound really petty now because I think he's a dick. I think, I just think, I mean, all that's true. He was a great player and a great goal scorer. And, you know, yeah, we probably, it's a surprise that we kept him for so long. But I think,
I don't think he's a very nice man. I don't think he's a nice fella.
I think there are ways that you can leave a club. And there are ways that you can behave after you've left. And I think when he kind of was on loan at West Brom, and then he played for us and scored against West Brom, he kind of wouldn't celebrate. And then he moves away from us. And we haven't made him, but we've brought him on for three seasons or more and built a team around him, giving him kind of a lot of leeway. And then to kind of behave the way he did at Old Trafford, he just comes across as a massive prick. And I'd happily boo him.
You know the way, you know, you said the way he behaved at Old Trafford there, obviously that was, you're making reference to his behaviour whilst playing for Manchester United, but I just want to rejog your minds on something actually, because I wondered whether or not to talk about this. The game was a 1-1 draw, obviously, so it wasn't like a massive, massive game in Everton's season, last season. However, his behaviour in an Everton shirt the last time he was at Old Trafford was pretty poor as well. Do you remember him shushing Ashley Williams when all Williams was saying to him, I think, was, can you run the channels, please, because we're defending for our lives. And when we get a breather and we get the ball up toward the final third, that's when you need to come in to play, Romelu, and try and, you know, at least keep hold of the ball for a little bit. Do you lads remember that evening and did that Would you think that was kind of like the beginning of the end of his relationship with the Evertonians, Jim first and then Groucho?
I don't think, yeah. I mean, I think by that point, most of us just didn't like him anyway. I think, and also he's sort of... when he's playing for us, or do you mean the celebrations at Old Trafford? No, I think problem with Lukaku is that for so long it'd been obvious that he'd been itching to move. I think that coloured our perspective of him throughout. Even when he was doing well and scoring goals, it was obvious that he was that you know, as we said earlier, we were just a stepping stone. And I think, you know, some players can behave poorly on the pitch, but if they're committed to the club, you can forgive them. Everything he did was set against that context, that he was a player who wasn't committed. So it wouldn't take much to kind of turn the crowd more against him. So I think from the first time he kind of began uttering things to the press that he was, you know, looking for more from Everton, or, you know, he dropped hints about the Champions League and that kind of stuff. I think from that point on, which was way before then, I think we knew the writing was on the wall. And I think we knew that this player, you know, his main interest was Romelu Lukaku and not Everton Football Club or the fans. And you know, a time is going to come probably very soon when he's off. And once you feel like that about a player, you can't really take it back. It doesn't change.
I assume you agree with that, Groucho.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the incident you mentioned until you mentioned it, to be honest. And Jim makes a very good case there. I agree with him. He's won me over. He's a prick.
He's one of them, though, where I'm going to be honest with you, lads. Like, I maybe liked him a little bit more than some Evertonians and gave him the benefit of the doubt a lot more than maybe I should. I have a tendency to do this because he did woo me with his goals. And... it's a strange one. I wouldn't have booed him at all. Although I was a little bit like, right, okay, stop kind of kicking things in our face now you've left. You know, what he did that. Yeah. The thing for me, lads, he did that press conference after he left, or the little interview he did for MUTV when, like, Paul Pogba was behind, splashing about in the pool. And he was saying, basically, I've joined the biggest club in the world. Okay, fine, you have the best fans in the world. The fans are great. I can't wait. I'm going to give 110%. You're going to see a side to me now that you haven't seen. And it's like, whoa. First of all, you know, you've got little lads, you know, with like your name on the back of their shirt that they've paid money for, their parents have paid money for, and you're talking about how you've joined the club with the greatest fans in the world. There was no reference to Everton at all, I don't think, in that first interview. And then he's talking about people are going to see a side of him that they've never seen before, which you're like, okay, so well, you're not giving 110% then for Everton. What is this like? And I think, you know, that kind of grated me a little bit. And then obviously the way he acted playing against us, which I know he got a bit of stick off the Evertonians, but you see other players take a little bit of stick. But, you know, I have respect for their teammates and the supporters that aren't giving them stick, because there'll always be a percentage that aren't, like me, that were giving him the benefit of the doubt. But you know what? Time and time again, he's just kicked things in our faces. You know, he's just stuck his fingers up. And now when he comes back on New Year's Day, I'll probably be a little bit hungover and I'll probably take it out on him. Most definitely.
I think I agree. One thing in between him leaving and playing against us for Man U, I seem to remember in his first pre-season friendly for Man U, didn't he score and kiss the badge?
Yes.
Which I remember even the Man U fans were saying, come on, mate, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a pre-season bloody friendly, you know, come off it. You know, who starts all that? It's just, I don't know. But silly, innit?
Yeah, it is. Moving on to a player who went through this with us, had this kind of relationship with us, and then obviously turned it around as the re-signing of Mr. Wayne Rooney. And that summer of optimism, which just kind of engulfed us after we signed about 400 players in a week, and then didn't sign anybody else for a while. So Blue Nose Bolt said on the forum it was the return of Wayne Rooney for him being the highlight. Also the fact that he wasn't held together with Gaffer Tate for two seasons, and he, Wayne Rooney, managed to bang in the goals, considering we'd heard that he was completely finished, mainly from Man United fans. You know, he's it's so glad that he's proven some of them wrong. He's been the brightest point in a rather dull season. And I'd agree with that. You know, I think that's probably my personal highlight of 2017, is getting Wayne back, because when he left, I was at that stage where, you know, I was probably about 14, 15, and broke my heart. You know, it really did. I think at that age, you know, you're probably a little bit younger, it's probably worse, but you still take things to heart a little bit when it comes to your football club. And to have him back now and to be performing the way he is, I think is terrific. So, Groucho, where does like the return of Wayne Rooney rank in your positive memories from 2017 as an Evertonian?
I think it's got to be up there, because I was a little bit older than you when he left.
Let's not mention that.
We'll leave it at that. I was against him coming back for most of the time he was at Man U. I saw most of his games for us. I was at his first two returns after he left, when they beat us in the cup. And then I think we beat Duncan Ferguson, scored 1-0 in the 2004-05 season. I was against it. The stick he got off the crowd was justified in my eyes. You know, the winding up of us that he did when he scored. But he turned it around, didn't he? You know, I think as time's gone on, that sort of waned a little bit. I went to Duncan Ferguson's testimonial when he played just that little cameo, and he was the best player on the pitch, and he was only on 15 minutes. He just transformed us. The crowd was on his side, chanting his name. He reciprocated, appreciated it. And I think, looking back, that was him sort of testing the waters to see whether he'd be welcome. If he'd got a bad reception that day, I don't think he'd be here now. I don't think I heard a boo, to be honest with you. You know, Gladys Street were all over him. I was in the lower, I think I was in the paddock that day. You know, he got a cracking reception, and he was the only player out there who seemed to be trying. I know it was a pre-season friendly, but you could just see he sort of wanted to come back. And maybe even then, I suppose I was against him coming back. But once he came back, I thought, do you know what? This will be all right. This will be good. I don't think he expected to play as much as he has, but he's been one of our better players this season. I know he hasn't been 100% every single game, but I think we've benefited from having him. I mean, he's still got next year to run as well on his contract, hasn't he? What happens beyond that, I don't know. But for the minute, I know he's had the flu, but he up until that point, he's been playing well.
He's supposed to be back,
isn't he, for the next game? So
Hopefully we've missed him. That's what I was going to ask. That's what I was going to ask Jim next, actually, Grouch. I was going to ask Jim, what do you think the possibility of you writing a second edition to your recent book, you know, The Greatest Games of Everton's History, a second edition maybe in 20 years' time or whatever, and you including and maybe a few games during Wayne Rooney's return? You think that's a possibility?
No, I don't think so. It was hard enough finding 50 games from, you know, over 100 years.
Wait a minute. There's two answers to this question, Jim. Are you saying you won't write a book again in 20 years' time? Are you saying that Wayne Rooney won't have a big enough impact that he'll score a goal in a very famous game for Everton? Which one is it, mate? Or is it both?
it's sort of both. But there's no way we'll get 50. But unless something amazing happens, we'll get 50 games in the next 20 years. But I don't know if Rooney will have that much impact over the next couple of years to have kind of great, really great games. I mean, he's done good moments since he came back. He's certainly, I mean, I was dead against him coming back. I didn't want him back. I thought initially it was a terrible move. I thought, you know, and some of the early games, it looked like, you know, he was a bit off the pace. Over recent months, I think I've been proven wrong, because he's certainly often the best player on the pitch for us, and the only kind of attacking threat we have at times. And he scored important goals, and he seems to really improve his performances. But pessimistically, I don't see us having many great moments in the next couple of years. Whether, you know, Rooney can contribute something to something magical, it just seems unlikely, I think.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. I agree with you, though. There's been some decent moments so far, and he has proved everybody wrong, and that is kind of nice. So, obviously, things went from bad to worse then. We signed
we had a very positive summer, and you had non-Evertonians stopping you and saying, "Oh God, you know, your lads are looking really good this year. I'm going to be intrigued to see how they do." And then we were all debating whether or not we could crack that top six. And then the season just really started quite well. Started okay, and then just went downhill dramatically. And Koeman was sacked, and then it was, you know, tumbling toward the relegation zone under Unsworth. That whole kind of period from, say, when was it? From the Chelsea away until what was Koeman's last game, lads?
Arsenal,
was it? It was Atalanta. Yeah, the Atalanta defeat, and then Arsenal last game. Groucho, what are your kind of outstanding memories from just that little period that I identified then?
It was just grim. I did actually think, various points in that period, that I think he was trying to get sacked. The decent thing would have been to have walked away, but he wouldn't have got a payout then, would he? So, you know, maybe cynically, the cynic in me thinks maybe he was trying to get sacked. But then the performances weren't that markedly improved under Unsworth, really. He saw us as a stepping stone, much the same way like Lukaku did, you know. But it's going to be a very long way to get to Barcelona, which is the job he wants from what he's done, certainly with us, and at some serious clubs he's been at. We were just awful. We looked like we were going down. And if he'd still been here and we'd have been playing like that, we'd have been rooted to the bottom. There's only been Swansea below us at the minute. I mean, we got beat. I know it was after he got sacked. But sort of in that sort of time period-ish, that Southampton team's awful and they hammered us. You know, that was the way he had us playing. So I think he had to. I'm not one for sacking managers willy-nilly, but he had to go.
Jim, do you think there's anything in what Groucho said there about him getting to a point and thinking, do you know what, it'd just be easier if I just got sacked?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think there was an interview with him, wasn't there, where he said, like, as soon as the season started, as soon as it obviously he wasn't getting his forward, he sort of thought that his team was fucked. You know, if a manager thinks that, then, you know, does he really want the job anymore? I mean, certainly looking at those performances. I mean, if you like look at Everton under Allardyce, same players. There are ways to grind out results. Whereas Koeman just didn't seem to give a shit. The team went out each week, different formation, different players, different approach. It just wasn't consistent. There's no attempt to kind of, you know, you're playing spares and you haven't got the players you want. So you could defend deep. You could try and get something out of the game. You could even make a win. But Everton weren't doing that. I mean, it was, in terms of the football that they were playing, I think it's probably the worst I've seen since maybe Kendall's season in 98. I mean, that was probably the worst Everton team I've ever seen. Maybe the Walker sides can push it. But they looked like they were never going to win a game. And it was utterly clueless football. And you're right, if he'd have stayed in charge of that side, we would unquestionably have dropped. Because they were shit and they deserved to go down. That's how bad they were. You couldn't, there's so few positives from that kind of brief period. It was just a really horrible time to be an Evertonian.
And Jim, how much damage do you think that 2017 has done to David Unsworth's managerial career in the future?
I don't know. I mean, it's a tough job, isn't it? I mean, it's your first managerial post in the top flight. You're taking over a team that is a mess. You know, couldn't defend. Being sure which players should play where, which players should make the first 11. And it was obvious that, like, pretty quickly it was obvious that he wasn't getting the job. So, like, he was just hanging on, wasn't he? Just kind of, you know, filling the post and knowing that he couldn't build, he couldn't maybe shape it the way he wanted to. So, yeah, I mean, it's very unlikely now Unsworth will get a job at a big club or a second Premier League club, but I still think he's done, some clubs will look at him and see what he's done. See the, you know, what he tried to do at Everton for a few weeks, and I think there's something. He's taking a talented coach, isn't he? I mean, he's got, there's a lot to him, and I felt a bit sorry for him in the end.
Yeah, Yeah. And Grouch, if I'd have said to you then at the start of 2017, you'll be doing a podcast with Ad for the forum at the end of 2017, and Big Sam Allardyce will be the manager, what do you reckon your reaction would have been?
I'd have said pull the other one. Are you having a laugh? But it's turned out that way, hasn't it? It's I don't think any of us would have expected that. But you know, that's football, isn't it? We're on our third, if you count Nunsworth, we're on our third manager. We've got three managers this year, you know. It's been bizarre, to say the least.
So that unbeaten run that he's managed to put together, obviously there was a bit. He was getting a bit of stick the other day for the way that we played down at West Brom. In fact, actually, let's just stick on that for a second, Jim. What did you think? A little bit of that was a bit unfair, because I certainly did after West Brom.
Yeah, I think really unfair. I mean, if you look at Everton and like that day, you think how many players you've got missing. I mean, you know, there's no Barkley, there's no Coleman, there's no Baines, there's no Garner, it's no McCarthy, no Rooney. You know, it's most of our, like, best players. Adds to the fact that we haven't really got a forward. What are you meant to do? You're meant to go out there and play expressive football and try and take on a team who are, like, fighting for their lives, who are big and strong and kind of out-muscle you. It's ridiculous to think that you could have done... I mean, you might have, yeah, we could have maybe attacked a little more. But at the moment, you know, this is still a side that has fragile confidence. And you can imagine if the results don't go our way a couple of times... That kind of that fear might creep back. His job, I think, now is to get to 40 points. That's probably what he knows. He's been hired primarily for that, and he gets to that point, and then we can see what happens. I think in the short term, it's just about getting this team that is kind of it was bereft of confidence and couldn't get a win, and suddenly we look hard to beat, and that's really important. We were never going to survive unless we were hard to beat, and. Yeah, I think he's done a good job. I think I think it's easy to forget just how unbelievably shit we were before he arrived. It doesn't matter about the 4-0 West Ham game, because that could have gone either way, that game. I think it's he's brought confidence back into the team, and we look solid again. And now we don't fear going down. Before he arrived, that fear was genuine.
Yeah.
And, he's getting a lot of shit, and I think it's unfair.
It certainly was a genuine fear. Sorry, I don't know. We were looking like we were on our way. I thought, you know, I was genuinely starting to think back to Wimbledon, Coventry. I thought, have we got a third one in us? You know, I mean, looking at least those two sides that managed to stay up, at least they could sort of scrape something. We just looked like we were one of the worst teams I've ever seen in my life at some points. With that, but yeah, all of a sudden he's come in and he's the first Everton manager to go 7 games unbeaten since being appointed. We weren't exactly playing glitter and football before. What do people expect? What do people want? You know, we had to at the point where we had to look up a clean sheet on Google to remember what one was. Mm-hmm. You know, we were just leaking goals. You go down like that.
It was really, really strange. And you know what? I watched his post-match interview on... I think I found it on YouTube. I don't think... Because they do loads, don't they, the managers now? Mm. And it was one that he'd done. And he was basically saying, no, I wanted the lads to attack more if they could. And I wanted us to get the ball and be a little bit more positive with it. And try and have a little bit more of a go. But we weren't able to do that. And sometimes, you know... I think sometimes you don't consider what the opposition are doing, and it might have been a case where there was a little bit of apprehension from the players, and we had to show a little bit more caution than maybe people expected. I'm not too sure. I mean, I've only seen the highlights, so you know I didn't actually get to watch the game in full. So maybe people who did and watched it a little bit more intently would be disagreeing with me here. But I think you know he's coming out and saying that he did want us to be a little bit more positive, but we weren't. And he said that the players played with a little bit of fear. But you know, West Brom were due a win, and I was saying to people, you know, we've gone 6 games unbeaten at that point, obviously, and they hadn't won in 6, and you're like, okay, it's around Christmas, they're at home, maybe I can see them probably nicking it, and we come away with a point, and you know, and now you're looking on to Bournemouth. So yeah, the reaction was really silly. One other big talking topic and big thing that's come up this year is obviously Bramley Moore Dock, which was in our minds obviously in 2016, I think, but we had the kind of all the announcements come out this year that the papers had been signed and whatever. Jim, being a bit of an Everton historian like you are, mate, are you still a little bit apprehensive about this? Do you think that is there any way it might not happen, or it might not be what we're led to believe that it could be?
Yeah, I don't think I'll believe it's real until it's open, to be honest. Because I mean, I think back to all the kind of false dawns we've had since, yeah. I think was it Peter Johnson was the first person to float was moving. That was back in like, what's that, in 96, 97. And like, you've had so many possible moves since, and you know, we're still at Goodison. So until it's built and we're allowed in and it's ours and the fans on the terraces and there's football being played, I still won't believe it's going to happen. I mean, I want it to happen because, you know, as much as I love Goodison, I don't think we can possibly compete or crack the top six from that position. We need to move. And this looks like a great move because we become the main club in the city. You know, when people come to Liverpool, they'll see this ground, which gives us a slight edge over the Shite. So, you know, it's a golden opportunity, and it's if it comes off, then, you know, all credit to Moshiri, because it means he was true to his word, and he's got us in a position that we need to be. But, you know, part of me still thinks that it won't happen.
And what do you reckon, Grouch?
Well, I understand what Jim's saying. Perfectly understandable that outlook. As I mean, as he says, we've had a few false dawns so far with that, but this one just seems to be a little bit more closer to happening, I suppose, because they've bought the land. They've actually got that earmark now. Still a long way to go. Completely understand what Jim thinks, but this one does seem to be a bit of a goal. I mean, I'd be sad to leave Goodison Park, as every single Evertonian will be. I mean, I grew up just by the ground. If anyone knows where, anyone listening knows where the taxi drivers club is, I grew up just there. So it was sort of on my doorstep when I was growing up. So that'll be sort of an added little bit of sadness for me. But I'm glad that we didn't go to Walton Hall Park, because obviously that being also close to where I grew up, I didn't want us to build on a park. I didn't want us to obliterate a park in the city, which obviously there's never enough parks in any city anyway. And I know we've got more than most, but the last thing you want to do is to get a name for destroying green space as close as it would have been to Goodison. But if we've got to move, which we've got to move, what better place to go than the waterfront? You know, we're right by a new cruise terminal that's being built. Will be the first thing that people, you know, coming in, we'll see about to see it from the city centre. It's not too far up the road from Costco. That bit's all being rebuilt. It will be on all the waterfront photos, which will be another bonus for, like Jim says, you know, we'll be the first sort of club in the city, which we always have been. But yeah, if we've got to move, where better to go to? And don't forget, we've moved before. You know, we're already on our second ground. You know, so if it's got to be done, what a place to move to.
Yeah, I think you're both right, and I'm excited about it, but trying to not get too excited about it, if you get me. Right, okay, let's take a quick break then, lads, and then we'll come back and we'll finish off with your goal of the year, the most Everton thing of 2017, and your favourite moment. Hello and welcome back to the Grand Old Team podcast. Right, okay, so this is, we're going to go over now the goal of the year with Groucho and Jim and myself as well. And then the most Everton thing, I think you all know what that means. It's Everton, that. It's a phrase that is banded around a lot as Evertonians. We all know what that means without probably being able to explain it. It's probably normally when things go astronomically wrong before looking so positive. That's a good way, I think. If it was in the dictionary or whatever, or it was on Google, that's how it would be explained. And then also the lad's favourite moment from the year too. So, okay, we'll start with goal of the year, because this is a fun one. And we'll start with you then, Jim. What was your goal of the year in this season? Oh, no, sorry, this year, obviously.
I mean, there's loads of ones that stick in your mind, like Tom Davis against City and Barkley's like cocky one against Bournemouth that we talked about earlier. But I think it's going to have to be Rooney's against West Ham, because it's not just like the best Everton goal. It's probably one of the best goals scored in the last 20 years. So just because of the technique and, you know, sort of killed that game off as well. And just and because it's him as well, I think that kind of get a hat-trick as well. It's just a fantastic moment to witness something like that. So for me, it's got to be that.
Okay, Grouch?
Firstly, I'll agree with that, because that is my number one choice. It's going to be used on compilations for years to come. That one is going to win goal of the season, goal of the decade, by far and away. But if we're going to just for the sake of being interested and not picking the same one, Rooney's penalty against Liverpool the other week. Only because, firstly, it was against Liverpool, and secondly, because it's the first penalty we've had there since the pyramids were built. So we have to enjoy that one.
Yeah, okay. I thought about both of those, and I also thought about Sigurdsson's against Hajduk Split, just because it was like really, really good and really far out, and he just kind of hit it on the knee, and it was just a good goal. However, I'm going to go with Tom Davis against City, just because I think, you know, for a lad of his age to do that, and also the build-up and the little kind of scissor thing that he did to knock it past Torre, I think it was just incredible. I thought he just showed loads and loads of maturity and just discipline, and he's just brilliant. It was just brilliant. So that was probably going to be my favourite. But no, all good choices, lads. It was a tough one, that was. There has actually been some good goals this year, considering some of the issues that we've had. Right, and boys, so the most Everton thing then. You both know what this means, as I've already said. You know, it doesn't really need too much explaining. Jim, what's been your most Everton thing in 2017?
I think 2017 is the most Everton thing, because
like, good one.
What better way to kind of crystallise the Everton experience than to kind of feel joy and confidence and optimism, which is a rarity for us, and then to be like, think everything is completely shit, and to have the other optimism just crushed and thinking we're going down. I think to go into a season thinking you're going to crack the top four, and then within space of, 3 months, being in the bottom two and hiring Sam Allardyce to get out of trouble. There you go. That's the perfect. That is so Everton. That's a perfect example of kind of how we should never get too excited about things, because you know there's a good chance it's all going to turn to shit very quickly.
Top that, Grouch.
On similar lines, to have gone from that optimism and to go right down the neck, to be that crap and still to remain the only team to take points off Man City in the league, that has got to be the most Everton thing. How did we do that?
No, yeah. I'm going to go for our main sponsor taking the piss out of us. That is just, that for me symbolises Everton. But no, on a serious note, you both make some really good points. I think going into the season just with that optimism, and me, again, doing that stupid thing that I do where I say to friends and stuff, you want to watch this season, you know, I think we might, you know, break into the top six at least. I remember before, after Martinez's first season, I said to a mate of mine, we went out for some food, he's a Stoke fan, and he was saying, your boys look like, I think they're going to have a good season this year. And I was like, yeah, I've got a feeling this might be the season that we win a trophy. And it just didn't happen at all. Yeah. But yeah, the sports person thing was obviously great fun this year. Just reminds me, the whole kind of like, the most Everton thing that's ever happened in our history, something that Jim said to me when we did a podcast a few weeks back, but, you know, talking about the launch of his book, when you mentioned that I think we've won the league, but on both times that's ushered in a world war. I think that just that statistic in itself, you know, thousands upon thousands of men die, you know, needlessly because Everton win the league. It's just horrific. such an Everton thing. And then, all right, then. So, Jim, what's your favourite moment then, mate?
Well, I'm going back to one that's mentioned. I'm going back to it's kind of twofold. It's Rooney's penalty at Anfield, because that was, you know, fantastic, but also funny to see the reaction.
They're still going on about it now.
Yeah, it's to see like I can't, every now and then I just rewatch Klopp's interview just to have like to cheer me up because you know he's so angry and so pissed off. And then when you kind of the day after when you're looking at some of kind of the Liverpool sites like the Anfield Rap and that, and they were so irritated because they had battered us and we hadn't like played particularly well, but we'd frustrated them. And then we get something at the game, and it's so often that like derbies go against us. It's rare to kind of come away from feeling like that. So, you know, you think about, I mean, I've been watching them for years, and it's those kind of wonderful derby moments are few and far between. So to get one this year, even though we didn't win, and like we could have got battered, it was just a, you know, yeah, I was saying to get a pen at their place is so rare. To score it is probably, you know, rarer still. And then to kind of hold in there and really, really get under their skin, which we haven't done for a long time either. So it's just, that was like, I think it's one of my favourite games of the last 20 years.
That sounds like the start of another book.
What about you then, Grouch?
Well, you were present at my favourite moment of the year. You and our Andy, when we took my little girl to her first game.
Of course.
I think it was Ruzenbroek, wasn't it?
It was. I'm glad you said that the name of the team because I still can't say that word. Yeah.
Long forgotten name.
Ruzenbroek.
Yeah, one of the few games we've won under Coleman this year. But I took her to that one, and then she also came to the Hajduk Split home game as well with us. So that's definitely been my highlight of this year.
That's a nice one, mate. Well,
is that a nice way to end, especially in Crimbo Limbo week?
That's a brilliant way to end Crimbo Limbo week. I love that, mate. That's lovely. That was really nice. It was a nice night, that was. I remember coming back and saying to my now wife, obviously saying, you know, I can't wait to be able to do that.
You know what, it was such a great feeling as well, and she was so into it as well and wanted to go to the next game, so we're talking, and she was excited. It was nice because it was in the summer, and although there were night games, she wasn't up for school the next day, so it was nice to be able to not have to worry about that as well, you know.
Yeah, she was good as gold as well, wasn't she? She was good for you know, a little kid at the match, because sometimes, you know, I suppose they can get hungry and stuff and want to wee and that, but she was good as gold, wasn't she? So, that's great. Was. Do you know what my favourite moment is, lads? And it's not actually, I suppose it's not really linked to Everton directly, which is weird for an Everton podcast, but I'll get there in a second. Was actually me going to Anfield and giving Jamie Carragher that picture of his best mate slipping over and then him looking like he was going to chin me. So that's probably got to be personally my favourite moment of the year, which is kind of linked to Everton because obviously I did it as a Derby preview, but none of the players were involved. You know what I mean? It's been a strange year, lads. Has it though, really, in the grand scheme of Everton? I don't actually think it's been that strange. I think it's a typical year supporting.
It's been more up and down than I think most have. I mean, previous ones have been down or up for the most part, but this has been one minute we've been great and the next minute we've been great and then we've signed loads of players and then we've been on the floor and then now we're looking up again. It's been odd.
It has, but it's never a dull day, is it? Lads, thank you for joining us again for this podcast. Jim, as we like to do, obviously you've got a bit of a platform now to promote your book. If anyone's got any Amazon vouchers or whatever, or a bit of spare cash after Christmas, what is your book, mate, and where can they buy it?
It's Everton's Greatest Games, 50 of our best moments from the start until Oviedo, and it's I think it's in the Everton shop. It's in Waterstones in town and Amazon as well.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, am I right in thinking that was the one? Did you take any quotes from me and put them in the book?
Yeah, there's quotes from you from, I can't remember now.
I just can't remember if it was this one or another one that you asked us to.
Yeah, no, it's this one. There's some quotes from the Moyes era.
Oh,
some of
right,
games,
yeah, no, of course, yeah. Well, obviously, being a young'un, I don't have too many other memories from before that, mate. So, anyway, we'll leave that there. As always, thank you for listening to the Grand Old Team podcast. Remember to subscribe, remember to like and share and do whatever you need to do on social media. As always, though, really appreciate you listening. All the best, and we'll speak to you again next time.
It's a grand old team to play for. It's a grand old team to support. And it, you know, your history, it's enough to make your heart go whoa.